Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hey there, Herman and Corin. So I was looking back to our previous episodes, trying to see, did we cover at some point in time, maybe the most obscure topic among the very many obscure topics we talked about here, and that is that of the number station. We've been kind of on a intelligence agency kick lately to make no allegations that Herman and Corin are affiliated with any intelligence organizations, although who knows, Herman Poppleberry is certainly a man or a donkey with a very colorful story. Number stations, for those who haven't heard about them, and apologies if we covered this before, because I thought we did, couldn't find it. It might have been lamentably disposed of in the great episode purge of a few weeks ago, where we got rid of some of our early episodes because the audio pipeline was frankly not what it is today. And in the interest of keeping these episodes high quality, they vanished into cyberspace forevermore. It might have been one of those ones. But anyway, let's talk about it today then. So number stations are these cryptic broadcasts that people who have shortwave radios have been reporting upon for years. They are believed to be, I think with a fair degree of certitude, transmissions from intelligence agencies to operatives based overseas, and to probably be using a one-time pad, which we might get to in future episodes about cryptography as we talk about such things. Now, it seems to me, I guess, a question. Netflix had a great series on modern tradecraft a few years ago, and anyone who enjoys watching The Americans might enjoy the depictions of tradecraft, apparently realistic, based upon a Russian sleeper cell that posed as ordinary residents in the US for many years. And when we think about that kind of tradecraft, we think about dead drops and, you know, marking where something is and digging into the ground. Now, I often wonder to myself, well, we've reached such an age of sophistication. We talked in the previous episode about spy gear, how in the context of undercover recordings, about how I was absolutely staggered by what I saw trying to buy a simple voice recorder. You can buy everything from a disguised Jewish skull cap, if you were looking for that, to a bugged teddy bear. So all this is in the consumer realm now, and it's affordable, which is a little bit concerning, but also revealing, because generally see that the military and intelligence world uses technology that's a few steps ahead of what then kind of rolls back to the civilian world. So it makes me think, well, you know, dead drops, all this kind of slightly invisible ink, all the really old school techniques of espionage, why would they be used anymore? Like, and what would they use for that matter? I have thought about that sometimes. And I just would assume, we talked about steganography before, hiding in plain sight as a very useful stratagem, that would probably be the answer. Something, you know, closed military networks, secure networks from, let's say, a base station to a head office, or failing that in the field, something encrypted that doesn't looks pretty innocuous to anyone sniffing packets or intercepting packets. That would be my best educated guess. But I certainly wouldn't say number stations. The only thing that they have really going for them, I guess, is HF radio and shortwave follows the curvature of the earth, unlike VHF, which is line of sight. And that's a pretty handy way to get information a long distance without immense transmission power. And but we do have that question. We've talked about this, and we've seen it with Iran intercepting, jamming LEO satellites lately. We've seen that triangulation of radio signals being received or transmitted is a very real threat. So I would have thought, even from that perspective, it's not the safest method. They do seem to still be going on. There are different cryptic messages being broadcast on shortwave, and there's a very colorful ham community that listens in on these and chronicles what they hear. So Herman and Corin, why in 2026 are these strange staples of the shortwave radio range being used? And if they are truly being operated by intelligence agencies, why? And what else might they be using as their primary? Herman and Corin, let's talk about number stations in today's episode of My Weird Prompts.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to My Weird Prompts. I'm Corin, and I'm joined, as always, by my brother and resident expert on all things technical and obscure.
Herman Poppleberry, at your service. It is great to be back in the studio, Corin. Well, I say studio, but we are really just in the living room while our housemate Daniel is probably in the kitchen wondering why we are talking about espionage at 10 in the morning.
Exactly. And speaking of Daniel, he actually sent us the prompt for today's episode. He was asking about something that feels like a relic of the Cold War, but is somehow still very much alive today. We are talking about number stations.
Oh man, you are speaking my language now. Number stations are one of those things that shouldn't exist in 2026, right? We have quantum-resistant encryption, satellite-linked neural interfaces, and high-speed fiber everywhere. And yet, if you tune a shortwave radio to the right frequency, you will still hear a creepy synthesized voice reading out strings of numbers in the middle of the night.
It is genuinely unsettling. I remember the first time I heard a recording of the Swedish Rhapsody or the Lincolnshire Poacher. There is something about that mechanical voice repeating five-digit blocks that just makes your skin crawl. But Daniel's question is the real kicker. Why? Why are intelligence agencies still using this in 2026? Is it just nostalgia, or is there a functional reason why a radio broadcast from the 1950s is better than a modern encrypted app?
It is definitely not nostalgia, Corin. In the world of intelligence, if something is still being used after 80 years, it is because it is the most effective tool for the job. To understand why, we have to look at the perfect intersection of physics and mathematics.
Okay, let's start with the math. When we talk about these numbers, we are usually talking about a one-time pad, right? We have touched on this briefly in past episodes, but let's really dig into why this is considered the holy grail of secrecy.
Right. So, a one-time pad, or OTP, is the only encryption method that is mathematically proven to be unbreakable. Not just difficult to break, not just time-consuming, but literally impossible to crack, provided you follow three strict rules. First, the key must be truly random. Second, the key must be at least as long as the message itself. And third, the key must never, ever be reused.
And that is where the name comes from. You use it once, and then you destroy the pad.
Exactly. If I want to send you a message, we both have identical pads of random numbers. I use my numbers to scramble the text, and you use your identical numbers to unscramble it. To anyone else, the resulting broadcast is just white noise or a series of meaningless digits. Without that specific physical pad, there is no computer in existence, not even the most advanced quantum systems we are seeing in 2026 that can find a pattern, because there is no pattern to find. It is pure randomness.
That makes sense from a security standpoint, but couldn't you just send that same encrypted data over the internet? Why use a loud public radio broadcast that anyone with a $50 receiver can hear?
That is actually the genius of it. It is what we call the hiding in plain sight principle. Think about it this way. If an operative in a foreign country is using a highly specialized encrypted satellite phone or even a suspicious app on their phone that pings a known CIA server, they are leaving a digital footprint. Signal intelligence agencies like the NSA or the GCHQ are looking for those spikes in traffic. They might not be able to read the message, but they know exactly who is sending it and where they are.
Right. The metadata is the giveaway.
Exactly. But a shortwave radio? A shortwave radio is a passive receiver. You don't send anything back. You just sit in your apartment, pull out a standard shortwave set, and listen. There is no way for a counterintelligence agency to know who is listening to a broadcast that covers half a continent. You could be a spy, or you could just be a lonely hobbyist in a basement in Berlin. The act of receiving the message is completely untraceable.
That is a fascinating point. It turns the entire concept of a broadcast on its head. Usually, we think of a broadcast as something meant for everyone. But here, the fact that it is meant for everyone is the very thing that protects the one person it is actually for. It provides total anonymity for the recipient.
Precisely. And then there is the physics of shortwave radio itself, which is just cool. Shortwave uses what we call skywave propagation, or skipping. The signals bounce off the ionosphere in the upper atmosphere and curve around the horizon. This means a station in Russia, like the famous UVB-76, also known as the buzzer, can be heard thousands of miles away without needing any internet infrastructure, no satellites, and no cables.
Which makes it incredibly resilient. We talked about this a bit in episode 1085 when we were looking at why wires still win in home networking, but this is like the ultimate version of that. If a major conflict broke out, and the undersea cables were cut, or the satellite constellations were jammed, these number stations would still be chirping away.
They are the ultimate backup. In fact, we have seen an uptick in number station activity recently, especially with the ongoing tensions in Eastern Europe and the South China Sea. When the digital world gets shaky, the old school analog world becomes the bedrock.
So we have established that they are secure and they are untraceable. But Herman, we are in 2026. Surely there are modern versions of this? Daniel asked what other methods agencies might be using as their primary communication. If number stations are the backup or the niche tool, what is the main event?
Well, the main event these days is often something called digital steganography. This is the art of hiding a message inside another piece of data in a way that doesn't look suspicious. Back in episode 277, we talked about AI as a shield and the art of obfuscation. Steganography is the peak of that.
Give me an example. How does that look in practice?
Imagine a high-resolution photo of a cat posted on a public social media account. To you and me, it is just a cat. But to an operative with the right software, the least significant bits of the image data have been altered to encode a message. You are talking about millions of pixels, and changing the color value of one pixel by a fraction of a percent is invisible to the human eye. It doesn't even change the file size in a way that looks weird.
So instead of a voice reading numbers over the radio, the spy is just scrolling through Instagram?
Exactly. It serves the same purpose as the number station. It is a one-to-many broadcast where the recipient remains anonymous. Millions of people look at that cat photo, but only one person knows it contains the coordinates for a dead drop.
That feels much more 2026, but I imagine even that has its risks. If the counterintelligence agencies get a hold of the software used to encode the images, they can start scanning every photo on the internet.
They do. It is a constant arms race. That is why agencies are moving toward more exotic methods. There is a technique called dead drop Wi-Fi, or what some call a pirate box. An operative might install a tiny, low-power Wi-Fi router inside a hollowed-out brick or a piece of street furniture. It doesn't connect to the internet, it just sits there. When another operative walks by with a modified phone, it automatically connects and swaps data in a split second. No cell towers involved, no logs on a server.
We actually touched on the tech of covert evidence gathering in episode 276, and it sounds like the same principles apply here. It is all about minimizing the window of exposure.
Right. But even with all that tech, there is a reason Daniel is still hearing about number stations. There is a simplicity to them that you just can't beat. Think about the equipment. To use a digital steganography tool, you need a computer or a smartphone. Those are inherently compromised devices. They have operating systems with backdoors, they have GPS, they have microphones. A shortwave radio from the 1970s has none of that. It is a dumb device in the best possible way.
It is the ultimate air gap.
Exactly. And let's not forget the psychological factor. Number stations are a form of signaling. When a station like the buzzer suddenly changes its pattern or starts reading names instead of numbers, it sends a message not just to the spies, but to the rival intelligence agencies. It says, "We are here, we are active, and we are communicating." It is a bit of a Cold War flex that still carries weight today.
That is an interesting angle. It is almost like a lighthouse. It is public, it is loud, and it is a constant reminder of a presence. You know, Herman, I was reading a report recently about a station called E06, which broadcasts in English. Apparently, they have been very active lately, and the voice sounds much more natural than it used to. It is clearly AI-generated now, rather than just old-school magnetic tape loops.
Oh, definitely. They are absolutely using neural text-to-speech engines now. It is ironic, isn't it? They are using the most cutting edge. AI to generate the voice for a technology that is nearly a century old. But that actually makes it more effective. Older synthesized voices had distinct artifacts that could sometimes be used to identify the specific hardware or software used to create the broadcast. Modern AI voices are so clean and so variable that you lose that fingerprint.
So they are upgrading the old tech to make it even harder to track. That is wild.
It really is. And to Daniel's point about why they are still being used in 2026, we have to look at the global landscape. We are seeing a lot of countries moving towards sovereign internets, right? Russia has the RuNet, China has the Great Firewall, and other nations are following suit. If you are a spy in a country that has completely cut itself off from the global web, how do you get a message out? You can't use Signal. You can't use Gmail. But you can always, always hear the radio.
It is the one medium that ignores borders. You can't put a firewall in the ionosphere.
Well, you can try to jam it. We see a lot of intentional interference. But jamming is expensive, it is imprecise, and it often interferes with your own communications. It is much harder to block a shortwave signal than it is to block an IP address.
So we have talked about the anonymity, the resilience, and the borderless nature of it. But what about the other side of Daniel's question? If they are operated by intelligence agencies, what is the actual day-to-day use? Is it just go to this location and pick up a package? Or is it more complex?
It can be anything. During the Cold War, it was often used to signal that a certain operation was a go, or to provide a new set of instructions. There is a famous story about a spy who was told to listen to a specific frequency at a specific time. If he heard a certain song, it meant he was in danger and needed to flee. Today, it is likely used for high-level coordination that needs to bypass the digital dragnet.
It is like the emergency broadcast system for the World of Shadows.
That is a great way to put it. And here is something most people don't realize. Number stations aren't just for spies in the field. They are also used for diplomatic communications. If an embassy is under surveillance and they suspect their secure lines are compromised, they might fall back on a prearranged number station schedule to receive instructions from their home country.
Wait, really? Even embassies?
Absolutely. Specifically in high-tension zones. It is a way to ensure that the message gets through even if the local government shuts down the internet or taps the phone lines. It is the ultimate fail-safe.
I am curious about the numbers themselves. We always hear them in blocks of five. Why five? Is that a mathematical thing or just a convention?
It is mostly convention, but it has a practical purpose. Five digits is about the limit of what a human can reliably remember and write down without making a mistake. If you go to 6 or 7, the error rate spikes. Since these messages are often being transcribed by hand in stressful situations, you want to keep the block short and manageable.
That makes a lot of sense. It is the human element in an otherwise mechanical process. You know, Herman, this whole conversation reminds me of episode 163, where we discussed why mainframes still run the global economy. It is that same idea that some technologies are so foundational and so reliable that replacing them with something newer actually introduces more risk than it solves.
Exactly. A mainframe is stable, it is secure, and we know exactly how it behaves. Shortwave radio is the same. We have had 100 years to master it. We know the propagation patterns, we know the interference risks, and we know how to hide within it. When you are dealing with life and death intelligence work, you don't want the latest beta version of an encrypted app. You want the thing that has worked for 80 years.
So, if someone listening right now wanted to hear one of these, what would they do? I mean, obviously, we are not encouraging anyone to get involved in international espionage, but just as a curiosity.
It is actually easier than ever. You don't even need a physical radio anymore. There are these things called web SDRs or software-defined radios that are connected to the internet. You can go to a website, pick a radio receiver located in, say, the Netherlands or Poland, and tune it yourself from your browser. There are entire communities of hobbyists, often called radio pirates or signal hunters, who spend their time monitoring these frequencies and logging every broadcast.
And they have names for all of them, right? Like the Gong Station or the Whales.
Yes, the names are usually based on the interval signals or the specific sounds the stations make. The buzzer is the most famous because it has been broadcasting a dull, repeating drone since the late 1970s. Every few years, it stops. A voice reads some names in Russian, and then it goes back to buzzing. It is one of the great mysteries of the radio world.
That is so eerie. What is the theory on that one? Is it a dead man's switch?
That is the most common theory, that it is part of a system called perimeter, or dead hand. The idea is that as long as the signal is broadcasting, it means the command structure is still intact. If the signal stops, it could trigger an automated response. Of course, that is purely speculative, but it adds to the mystique.
It is amazing how much of our world is still built on these analog foundations. We think of ourselves as living in this purely digital age, but the ghosts of the 20th century are still all around us, chirping in the background.
They really are. And I think that is the answer to Daniel's question. Number stations are still here because they solve a problem that high-tech hasn't been able to solve yet. How do you send a message to someone in total secrecy, with total anonymity, across thousands of miles, without leaving a single trace that can be followed? Until someone invents a better way to do that, the numbers will keep coming.
It is a sobering thought, actually. It means the world of espionage is just as active as it ever was. It has just gotten better at hiding.
Oh, it is more active than ever. We just don't see it because we are all looking at our screens. But the airwaves are full of secrets.
Well, on that note, let's talk about some practical takeaways for our listeners. Because while most of us aren't spies, there are things we can learn from this level of security.
Absolutely. The first big takeaway is the value of the one-time pad concept. While you probably don't need a physical pad, the principle of using a unique, random key for every interaction is the basis of modern secure communication. If you are using the same password for everything, you are essentially reusing your pad, and that is how you get cracked.
That is a great point. Diversity in your security layers is key. And another takeaway for me is the idea of the air gap. We are so used to being constantly connected, but there is a real security benefit to having devices that aren't on the grid. If you have truly sensitive information, maybe it shouldn't be on a device with a Wi-Fi chip.
Exactly. Sometimes the best way to move forward is to take a step back into the analog world. Even something as simple as writing down your most important recovery keys on a piece of paper and putting it in a physical safe is more secure than any cloud storage.
It is the Pobbleberry method. Go low-tech when the stakes are high.
You know I love my paper notebooks, Korn. You can't hack a Luketerm with a remote exploit.
True. Although you can lose it on the bus, which is a different kind of security risk.
Fair point. Physical security is just as important as digital security.
Well, this has been a fascinating deep dive. Daniel, thank you for the prompt. It really opened up a rabbit hole I wasn't expecting. And to our listeners, if you have been enjoying my weird prompts, we would really appreciate it if you could leave us a review on your podcast app or on Spotify. It genuinely helps other people find the show and keeps us going.
It really does. We love seeing those reviews pop up. And if you want to get in touch or see the show notes for this episode, head over to myweirdprompts.com. We have got links to some of those web SDRs we mentioned if you want to try and find a number station yourself.
Just don't blame us if you start hearing voices in your sleep.
Hey, it is all part of the experience.
Before we wrap up, Herman, any final predictions? Do you think number stations will still be around in 2050?
You know, I actually do. As long as we have an ionosphere and as long as humans have secrets, shortwave radio will have a place. It is the cockroach of communication technology. It can survive almost anything.
I love that. The cockroach of communication. Well, that is a wrap for episode 280. Thank you all for listening to My Weird Prompts. I am Korn.
And I am Herman Poppleberry.
We will see you next week, where we might just be diving into something a little less shadowy, but hopefully just as weird.
Until then, keep your ears open and your pad secret.
Stay curious, everyone.
Bye now.
Take care.
Oh, and Korn?
Yeah?
I think I heard a series of beeps coming from your toaster this morning. You might want to check if it is transmitting to a submarine in the Mediterranean.
Very funny, Herman. It was just the bagel setting.
That is exactly what a spy would say.
Oh, goodbye, Herman.
Goodbye.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.